What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jade Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Tainus Hoopers family. Obviously, it is All-Star break. The long stretch of torture has ended for a few days at least, and we're on a break. So I thought while we're on this break that we should probably get into some draft stuff. Most teams aren't thinking about the draft until a little bit later into the season, but unfortunately we are Timberwolves fans, and the draft is the next milestone, I guess, or at least the draft lottery. As you know, the Timberwolves only get to keep their pick if it's 1, 2, or 3. For the point of this episode, we're going to pretend like I guess they are going to keep it, and we're gonna talk about these our top 3 prospects. Like they're a chance to actually be on the Timberwolves team and that Lady Luck isn't constantly pitted against us. So to join me to do all that is Tainus Hoopers draft expert, hashtag basketball draft expert, Tyler Metcalf. Tyler, what's going on, dude?
It's going well. It's the best time of the year for Timberwolves basketball. Just a week without it. Unfortunately, this is where we're at this year. Not where we wanted to be, at least at this point of the season, but here we are.
Yeah, it's a nice little reprieve from getting blown out every night or from blowing a 15-point lead every night. Yeah. If you don't know, Tyler does awesome draft big boards, ridiculously detailed, 45 prospects over at hashtag basketball. And really, if you haven't read that before this episode, you should pause this right now and go and read it, or at least read, you know, your favorite players. You can go through his top 45 and really get a good sense of each guy without, I guess, spending hours and hours watching those players. Unfortunately, we are degenerates, so we have spent hours and hours watching those players. And we're just going to go through our top three today, or at least our top three for the Timberwolves, and just get a better insight in that for those of you who don't watch as much college basketball, and then, I guess, you know, discuss how important it is for Minnesota to have some luck on draft lottery night and keep this pick. So obviously, Tyler, I think the logical place here to start is Cade Cunningham. There's some competition, I guess, for the number one pick, but he's still the number one prospect in this class and probably in the world right now. Elite blend of size at 6'8", 220 pounds. Playmaking ability, shot creation, finishing around the rim. Pretty much the ideal heliocentric offensive prospect for today's NBA. So let's start with the passing, which is probably his most appealing and unique trait. He's only averaging a touch under 4 assists a game at Oklahoma State this season. But what do you see from Cade that makes him such an awesome and, I guess, potentially generational passer for someone his size?
And the whole game is just, excuse me, the whole game is just effortless
good,
to him.
Good start.
Yeah, sorry. it's just very simple, and he has the height to see over guys, and we're seeing that how much of a factor that is with guys like LaMelo and Ben Simmons, and how it really just helps them see the entire floor, and he has that. So, and even if he was a couple inches shorter, his floor vision is impeccable, and he really sees every cut. He knows where the ball should move before it gets to him, and he's always looking to get his guys involved early. A lot of his numbers, or he may come across passive early in games, and I don't think that's because he's, you know, a passive player. It's because he's looking to move the ball and looking to get his guys involved, and we see a lot of really flashy high-level passers who are out there. And they can make the similar types of passes, but they're not always directly looking to get their guys going early, because Cade knows that he can kind of get into his own rhythm whenever he wants to, whenever his team needs to, but he knows it's more important for him to get his teammates going, get them in that rhythm, and just that unselfishness, that feel for the game, just being able to go in and out of his own rhythm is really, really impressive. And a lot of the times with some of these young, you know, elite prospects, they don't always make their teammates better, and Cade's passing absolutely makes him better, because if you're spotting up in the corner, he's going to put it right in your shooting pocket from the other side of the court. If you're a rim running big man, he's going to find you on the lob. If you're active off ball, he's going to find you on the cut, and the ball's always going to be exactly where it needs to be. His touch, his vision, the weight he puts on his passes, it's incredible.
Yeah, the point that you made, and I think the one that really stands out to me in terms of what's going to make him pop at the NBA level as a passer, is the ability to throw those live dribble cross-court passes, especially when he's getting blitzed off a pick and roll. In the NBA, especially if he can prove to be a damaging scorer, guys are going to blitz you off the pick and roll just to get the ball out of your hands, especially if he's on a team that's a pretty bad team. If he gets drafted by Minnesota or Detroit or one of these teams that are likely going to have a top three pick or a top one pick, they blitz him off the pick and roll, and he can throw those live dribble cross-court passes and skip the middle pass, pretty much just skip the middle man in general and just hit the corner guy in his shooting pocket. That is the most important pass in the NBA at the moment, and not a lot of people can do it, and especially not a lot of guys, 6'8" can do it. So I think you mentioned it, that I think that's really an important skill, and then it's everything else that goes with it. It's not like that's his only passing skill. The live dribble passes to roll man, like just picking the ball up with that one hand, even with his left hand, and hitting the roll man in stride. He's a crazy good passer, man. And if he didn't play for Oklahoma State and they didn't brick so many jumpers, he would be averaging 8 assists plus a game.
You mean you don't like that the rest of his team is shooting 31% from three? That's not a good number.
Man, the amount of passes I have clipped on my computer that like are so nice, and then it hits like the side of the backboard from the corner, or like an air ball. Like there's that one where he gets blitzed on the pick and roll, he throws the cross court live dribble pass, and it literally misses the ring from the corner by a meter. Like that's got to be deflating, and I think that's half the reason why he's been so aggressive as a scorer, probably more aggressive than I think that we'll see in the NBA level when he is surrounded by really good players, because he's more than willing to pass as much as he shoots, or shoot as much as he or shoot more than he passes. Like he really does have the feel for what he needs to do to win a game, and right now it's score the ball, because no one else can really do it. And he's averaging 19.7 points a game, 45.5% from the field, 42.5% on 4.8 threes a game, 84% from the line. I've been super impressed and a little bit surprised just after watching him at high school how good of a scorer he is. Obviously, like the book on him was that he could score the ball and he could pass even better. But he's been awesome as a scorer, really awesome. What do you think he still needs to work on to become that elite level NBA scorer?
Well, so his scoring game, it kind of reminds me of Kawhi Leonard, in the sense where he's really patient, he's really strong on the ball, and he will just kind of patiently play with the defender until he gets to a spot. And he can post up smaller guys. He's been solid from behind the arc. His mid-range game is really impressive with his, crossover into a pull-up. And he's done an excellent job of driving, stopping on a dime, shedding off the defender, and then just pulling up from 15 feet. So, the outside shooting needs to continue to improve. It's been a lot better than most people thought it was going to be this year. And I think you said 42%. That's really it. Maybe a little better kind of shot selection and touch around the rim, because he's not, one of these explosive athletes that's gonna sky over people. So maybe I'd like to see just a little bit more of kind of like the creativity and the adjustments that he makes in the mid-range when he's pulling up off the dribble and shedding that guy for a jumper. See a little more of that when he gets to the rim, because right now a lot of it's just going up and going through guys. It's working because he's a strong dude, he's a big dude, and he's getting to the line a bunch. But I'm not sure that he'll get all those all of these calls that he's been getting once he gets into the NBA.
Or be able to finish over the rim protectors as easily as he is. He's still going to be able to finish because he's just like he's just one of those guys who can put the ball in the bucket. But it's, you know, when you're facing Miles Turner, it's a bit different to facing,
yeah,
Oklahoma.
And to be clear, I mean, he's not bad around the basket. He's in the 88th percentile in points per possession around the basket. So, and he's it's really good. It's just adding a little more creativity, a little flair, to really throw off the defenders, to really make sure that that ball is getting over that weak side rotator.
What do you think of his ability, his, you know, lack of burst relative to, I guess, the really, you know, explosive athletes in the NBA? It is because he manages without it, right? Like, he's very crafty. I don't think his handle is advanced enough to where it kind of, where he can really be that awesome crafty guy. Like, the Luka comparison is tossed around a lot for Cade, and I think it's apt to me in the fact that he isn't the fastest or the strongest guy, but he's fast enough and strong enough for those craftiness kind of skills to supplement, you know, his speed and strength. But I still think that he needs to improve his ball handling to get to that Luka kind of level, because Luka has the ball on a string. Still 92nd percentile in isolations and 68th percentile as a pick and roll ball handler. But like, what? How much do you think the burst might limit him, especially early on?
And I don't think it really will, because I kind of, as I mentioned with that Kawhi comparison, where he's just, whenever these smaller guards, you know, reach in, he just turns his shoulder and they bounce off of him, and then he just spins to the other shoulder, takes two dribbles, crosses back over, gets back to his spot, and pulls up. So the patience and the strength that he has, I think really kind of counterbalance his lack of that elite first step, that explosiveness that he just doesn't have right now. So, I obviously, it'd be great if he was this world-class athlete, but I just...
It would not be great for the league because he would average 40 and 10 a game.
It would be unfair. it'd be fun for us fans, but... I just the way he knows where he wants to get to, and you can tell that as he's going through his dribble moves, he's already planned out exactly how he's going to shed his defender, whether it's going to be dropping the shoulder, or, you know, a little hand in the back as he pulls up, or a crossover into a spin, into a hesitation, and then drives past him for a scoop layup. So I think he's already at that cerebral point where he knows exactly what he wants to do before he's getting the ball, and where the defense is and how he's going to attack them. So obviously that quick lightning first step would be awesome, but I think that he's figured out already at such a young age every other aspect of how to attack and kind of dismantle a defense, that it really isn't going to matter.
He's got superstar feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I just don't think you can teach or can improve. Like, you can obviously enhance your feel for the game as you get more reps in the NBA or get more reps against really good players, but I don't think you can ever just wake up one day with superstar feel for the game. And you're born with that, and I think Cade has that. And as you said, it's the ability to just think two steps ahead of everyone in every facet, whether it's, you know, he's already seen two passes ahead when he's handling the ball. He already knows where he's going to go to shoot the ball because he knows how the defense is going to react to the first move he does. So he's already planning his third move to get to the ring. It's truly impressive to watch it. And I think if anyone else has watched the Mike Smith's film breakdown with Cade, he just strikes me as someone who just knows the game so ridiculously well for someone his age. The way he spoke was just super impressive. I'm sure that when it comes to, you know, draft combine and interviews and stuff, he's going to blow teams away with his knowledge of the game and the way he speaks about it just as much as what he actually does on the damn court. Like, it's pretty wild. There seems to be generational generational seems to be a word tossed around a lot because, you know, every 2 years there's a Zion or a Cade or an Anthony Davis, but, like, he does feel like someone who's generational. What do you think of the defense? I think if he can guard fours, that's how he fits on this Minnesota team without having to make that tough decision on D'Angelo Russell, but that's more of an iffy one than a given. What do you think?
And so I really like his defense. I know there have been some issues kind of lately with him being out of position, but when your Oklahoma State plays this really weird kind of switchy zone, it's just a lot of chaos going on where guys are sprinting and recovering and rotating, and there's just a lot of chaos going on that's just...
They're scrambling for entire positions.
Yeah, for 30 seconds every time.
Yeah.
It looks exhausting. so I, when you play a scheme like that, with that switch-heavy zone... You know, there are going to be a lot of mishaps and, you know, being out of position. But generally, I think he's a really good on-ball defender. I think he can guard 1 through 4. I think he can, he's a smart off-ball defender. Sometimes he's a little late with his rotations, but I think that's just something that will improve as he gets older. The offensive load that he's carrying for that team is, you know, 90% of what they have to do. So I think that, you know, he has to find at least some points to, you know, coast. Not that he's not trying hard or whatever. Poor wording, but you get it. So once that, you know, that level of responsibility kind of levels out in the NBA, I think his defense is going to just really, really come through a lot more impressively than it has.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I think it's in a way that's not as advanced, but that feel for the game kind of carries over to defensive end. Like, he just knows what to do all the time, and he's not like Devin Vassell, say, where Devin Vassell kind of knew what to do all the time and could execute it, you know, at the highest level all the time. But he knows, Cade knows enough of what to do where he's not a turnstile, and you can't force switches and pick on him because he won't score enough to win. I'm curious, you know, I guess this is people listening to the show for the Wolves. I'm curious, obviously, Todd, I think Cade is the player that you don't worry. You don't worry about fit with a Cade Cunningham. Like, you fit around him. He doesn't have to fit into you. But what do you think? Like, if Minnesota got the first pick, if tomorrow was draft night, what's happening with this team when Cade Cunningham walks through the door?
He's immediately the second best player on the team. And I'm figuring out how the team works around him and how Karl Anthony Towns fits into that. And that,
it's not a stretch to think by, like, year two, he's the best player on the team. That's no, how no, high not I at am. All. I think he definitely has more potential than Towns and what we know Towns is right now.
Yeah, and it wouldn't shock me if he's an all-star by his second or third year, by any means. And he's going to put up the numbers. It's whether or not it's going to, you know, how good or bad is whatever team he's going to be. You know, what jump do they actually make? But yeah, if the Timberwolves somehow get lucky enough to get this guy, it's his team. I'm focused on building around him. I want to build around him and Kat, but I'm building around Cade first. He's younger, he's less expensive, and I think his ceiling is at this point is probably way higher.
Yeah. What do you do with D'Lo in this situation? Obviously, I think Cade is your point guard. Obviously, he's big enough to maybe guard fours on defense, but he's a one on offense, and I think it's malpractice if you use him any other way than as your, you know, 20 to 30% usage rate point guard, which is pretty much D'Angelo Russell, and obviously a much worse version if we're projecting into the future. And then you have Malik Beasley and Anthony Edwards, who aren't shy about getting their own shots up. So what do you do with all those ball handlers and shot creators, you know, without kind of having too many cooks in the kitchen?
Yeah, so initially I try and play D'Lo, and this is assuming, I'm guessing, no roster movement.
Yeah.
I try and play D'Lo, and Cade together. I think D'Lo's shown a little more effectiveness as an off-ball scorer than Cade has so far. Cade has been good at kind of screening, some occasional cutting, and he's a really good post-up player. So, you know, you can absolutely run sets to kind of force a size mismatch there and then feed him the ball in the post. You know, and Malik and Ant, it's kind of, you know, I think it just furthers the necessity for Ant to learn how to play off ball, and
yeah,
play off ball by like cutting and moving and screening and not just standing in the corner and chucking up horrible threes.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, if you get, you know, if you get D'Lo spotting up off of a Cade pick and roll and Cat pops out, Ant's cutting from the weak side, and that's a lot of size, that's a lot of athleticism, that's a lot of skill that defenses have to deal with. So it's fun in theory, and Chris Finch is supposed to be this offensive innovator, so hopefully, and he's way smarter and knows way more basketball than I'll even ever forget. So, off to a hot start here. But I don't worry about those other guys. I worry about how this team moves forward with Cade. And if they can't figure out that they're not that lead guy and that this should be his team, then, you know, that's on them. And they, you know, I feel like Malik Beasley would absolutely feast as an off-ball shooter with Cade running point.
Yeah, I think, like, as you kind of alluded to there, you just get in, those other guys just have to get in where they fit in. I think, obviously, you need to continue to develop Ant, and we both have fairly high hopes for Ant, and at some points this season he's been better than we thought he would, and some points he's been exactly who we thought he would in the first season. But, like, yeah, they just, like, they have to learn to play around Cade, or, you know, I guess you start looking at other options for players who can play around Cade, because if you get him and you have Karl-Anthony Towns, that's your two guys right there. Then you just need to find guys who fit around those two. So it would be very interesting. I think there'd be times when there wasn't enough ball to go around. There's probably one too many. Like, if you're playing a lineup that's, say we're talking, where, you know, putting these positions with who they're guarding, not who they're playing offensively. But if you're running Russell, Beasley, Edwards, Cade, Towns, that's probably one too many guys who need the ball to be effective.
Yeah, and defensively it'll be a mess.
Yeah, exactly. But that's better than, and they're definitely winning more games than they did right now. And they are definitely, like, I'd be pretty surprised if that isn't one of the best offenses in the league, just purely based on Towns and Cunningham driving it. But, you know, but that's what we have forward, you know, have to look forward to if Minnesota do happen to pick up the first pick.
Yeah, and just real quick point, and when we say that, you know, all right, it's Cade's team, they got to figure out how to play with him and not the other way around. I don't want that to come across as Cade's this superstar prima donna, like, who's going to stomp through the door and be like, this is my team now, guys. Like,
get the F out of the way. He'd be happy to play, you know, as a third option, right, more than I think the fans would be happy, or us would be happy to watch him be a third option, because he should be a second or first option.
He's a super easy guy to play with, super competitive, like, great leader, all that kind of stuff. So if for some reason the listener in their mind got this vision of this prima donna coming in and just taking over a team without winning anything, that's not him at all.
Yeah. So the next guy I want to focus on is, obviously, I think at this point the consensus number two, and I think it's a testament to how good Evan Mobley is to say that he still maybe has an outside chance of being the top pick over Cunningham for some teams. And Cunningham, obviously, as we said, looks every bit a generational lead ball handler, big wing type of guy, which is the most valuable archetype in the league. And Mobley still matches his, you know, him almost step for step in terms of talent and a, like, absurd uniqueness of a player. Obviously, Mobley's not a wing, 7 foot, 210 pounds, 7'5" wingspan that honestly feels like another 5 inches on that when you're actually watching him out there kind of messing up shots for you know, opposition and moving around the court like some sort of alien. 16 points a game, 8 rebounds, 2.5 blocks, 58.2% from the field, 30% from long range. Mobley's a unicorn, right? Like, not in the Porzingis, you know, throwing up half-court shots way, but, like, if it wasn't for Cade, he's a surefire number one pick in most classes, I think. And, like, the defense is a whole nother kettle of fish, but, like, let's start with the offense. What's so unique about him offensively?
Just everything he does is just really just smooth and fluid, and it feels natural that he's out on the basketball court. And like you mentioned his length and that his arms just go on forever. And he clearly knows that too, because just his release points on every shot are always in a spot where the defense has zero possibility of ever getting to it. He hasn't shown a whole lot of ability or willingness to shoot from outside yet. I think he'll eventually get there, because I do like his jumper. I think it'll eventually translate as he builds on it.
And he's a very good face-up shooter as well. Like, in the mid-range, very good face-up shooter, which is always a, you know, pretty good sign that he can extend that out as his career progresses.
Yeah, and just the creativity and footwork that he has in the post and operating in the high post or mid post, he's just really comfortable at getting his own shot and, you know, stepping through and extending for a scoop finish or faking to his left and turning back over his right shoulder for a hook. It's just a really smooth, comfortable, not super flashy offensive game where he's gonna be dunking over dudes. And he's an okay lob finisher. I worry a little bit about his strength and ability to move guys, because I don't think he's going to be able to do that for the first couple years, but I'm encouraged that he doesn't seem afraid of contact. And it doesn't really affect him. He's more than willing to go up through guys. And on every defensive rebound, he's always looking for a guy, and he puts a body on someone to box out. So he absolutely needs to get stronger, and he'll have trouble kind of really controlling that post area like a lot of big men, like elite level big men in the NBA do. But his willingness to hit guys and, you know, him not being afraid of contact, I think is really, really encouraging.
Yeah, I think we'll get to it in a minute, but I think most of his offensive deficiencies kind of stem from the strength issue, and which is both, I guess, worrying and then also encouraging, because, you know, strength is one thing that you can almost guarantee you can increase as you get older and as you get into an NBA, you know, strength and conditioning program. The thing that stands out the most to me, I completely agree on everything that you said, especially his footwork. The release point is just like 12 feet in the air at any point. Those little like sweeping hook shots that he does, where it's just like no one in the world will block that. Like Rudy Gobert on a trampoline won't block that. Like, it's so smooth looking. He's got awesome touch on him as well. Like, it's definitely not just a function of being tall. He's guiding them into the ring. Most of the time he's shooting them downward. Like, that's how high he is above the ring. Like, but the most impressive thing for me is his ability to pass the ball. Like, I think that, you know, especially the flavor of the month right now, especially in a lot of my, you know, writing and podcasts, is Chris Finch kind of utilizing Karl-Anthony Towns as a passer from the elbow, and the same way he did with Jokic, the same way he did with DeMarcus Cousins in New Orleans. And that's like, Evan Mobley is kind of like built in a lab to play that role. Like, he's passing, he's quick decisions from the elbow. He finds the open guy immediately when the defense comes to double. He the same way as Cade, he just can see that play unfolding before it's even unfolded. He knows whoever comes and doubles him, their guy's going to be open. He flings little, you know, scoop passes over to other big men who are sitting in the dunker spot, to his brother sitting in the dunker spot for USC. Like, it's his feel for the game and his ability to make passing reads for a guy who's legitimately 7 foot and humongous, is just really, that's what kind of, you know, makes me say the word unicorn, because guys his size just don't do that. Like, and not especially not at 19 years old and still a freshman in college. And then there's the ball handling. I know. I think he's definitely a guy who can attack closeouts. He doesn't have the strength at the moment. He picks up his dribble quite early, I think, because he doesn't have the strength to kind of, you know, barge through guys. And even, like you said, he will try it. But I think for the most part, when he does, you know, get a pump fake on the perimeter and go around someone, he picks up his dribble pretty early and turns his back to the basket to try and go into like a turnaround fadeaway kind of shot. Like, that seems to be his default shot when someone's too big for him, is to just go to that turnaround baseline fadeaway out of the post, which is looks pretty, but it's probably not the shot that you want to be taking all the time. But he can make passes out of those driving kick kind of sequences, and I just think that's another wild thing for a guy his size to be able to do, and then get out and transition, dribble the ball up off a rebound by himself. Like, he's just insanely coordinated for a guy his size, and that's we haven't even mentioned the defense, which we will get to. But what really worries you about the strength? Because that is what I want to touch on. I think a lot of things kind of stem from them strength issues that are really the only holes in his game.
Yeah, and it mainly on the defensive end. And he'll early in his career, he's going to get eaten alive by bigger guys. And right now at USC, he's getting, you know, get guys who are smaller than him are pretty easily establishing deep position and holding it. And he fights down there to, you know, try and front him or use his length to get around and contest. But early on, he's gonna really struggle to keep guys out of the paint, and he's gonna block a good amount of shots. He's gonna contest. He's gonna, you know, make a difference with his verticality, but bigger guys, I mean, I know like Embiid and Jokic can establish position wherever they want, whenever they want, but, you know, they're against Mobley early on, they're going to be able to just sit under the rim and just put him through the hoop. So I worry how that kind of, you know, affects him mentally or long term, and how he deals with it, because, you know, when you see a stocky 6'9 kid from Utah putting him under the rim, it's like, well, okay, so how are we going to do this in the NBA? Because that's not a good sign. And, you know, thinking back to like Cat's rookie year and first couple years, he had that issue too, because he just didn't have that lower body strength, so guys were able to just really move him kind of effortlessly. And Mobley's, you know, those high hips, those really long legs, I worry about how much stronger. I obviously anticipate him to get stronger. He's 19. Everyone gets stronger after 19. But I don't think he's gonna get that similar, you know, base that like guys like Embiid have. So I worry about how that's going to affect him just really being that rim controlling, that post controlling center and deterrent that, you know, that you would expect from a guy going number two with his skills.
I think the hope is, and this is obviously a pretty wild comparison because, you know, but the hope is that he can be like a Rudy Gobert type, I think, where you never really wowed by his physical. Like, obviously, Gobert's a big dude, but he was also super skinny when he came into the league, and he's still not like broad as the way that Embiid is, or Jokic, you know, or Miles Turner even. Like, he's more of just a length deterrent and someone who has enough strength that he can at least battle those guys enough to knock them off their spot just that bit, and then block their shot when they put it up with the long arms. I think that Mobley has a chance to be that in that mold, if not, you know, the two going on probably three-time defensive player of the year. But I also think that those issues are one of the reasons why I actually like his fit next to Towns, because Towns is not a perfect defender at all by any means. But I think if Minnesota were to draft Mobley, he would probably be the four on defense and guarding fours, and therefore not, as you said, getting put in the floor as much by those big dudes. I think you'd still have Towns guard Embiid, and you still have Towns guard Jokic, and then you have Mobley as more of a weak side guy and someone who's guarding stretch fours most of the time, and that's transitioning into the defense. Actually, first, I just want to hit on that strength. One more thing is that on offense, as I said before, he gets into post ups too often, I think, instead of being able to go through bigger guys. But he also, the main thing that I'm concerned about is he's not a very good screen setter. He slips out of screens really well, but he slips out of screens almost 95% almost every time. Like, he rarely ever makes contact with his screens, and that has made life a little bit harder on the USC guards. And we see it right now. Like, you know, Karl Anthony Towns has topped some criticism lately for his screening, especially when you watch like an Ed Davis, you know, who was in there when Towns was hurt, and Ed Davis could really set a pick. Like, it's like screen setting is super important, and you're not going to be able to just slip out of screens and get roll man looks all the time in the NBA. The defense is just too advanced, and you know, guys are tagging the roller on instinct more than they are at the college level. So that concerns me, and I don't think that it's, again, like I like to finish in the rim, I don't think it's an unwillingness to do it. I just think that he has never been strong enough to set these big screens, so he's just got accustomed to slipping out of them and using his athleticism and his catch radius. Like, he can catch a ball anywhere within 5 feet of him. Like, I think he's just gotten used to being that big, tall dude who doesn't set hard screens, but at some point he's going to need to learn how to set a screen a bit better.
Yeah, and I feel like he's never really been taught how to screen, because when you're that athletic and that skilled, why would any youth coach be like, hey, come out here and screen for this guy who has a fraction of your talent, instead of, hey, go post up on the dude who's a foot shorter than you and we're just going to feed you. So I think it's more of an issue of him just never being taught how to, or it really being emphasized in his game. You know, actually, right before we were doing this, I was going through the USC-Stanford game, and he set a good screen, and the ball handler came off of it and hit a pull-up jumper. I was like, hey, look, that's Mobley's a decent Mobley screen. That's rare sighting. And it's like, okay, so you can do this. And kind of going back to, like, that his whole mentality with contact, I don't think it's something where he's afraid for this guy to hit him. I because he's making contact with guys in every other facet of the game. I really think it's just he's never been taught it. He's never been told to do it. So it is an issue. If, you know, 2 years from now, you know, we're talking about the league and it's like, Evan Mobley still can't set a screen, then okay, that's a legitimate issue. But I think that's something where, you know, that's a learnable skill that he can really implement after, you know, a couple weeks in training camp.
It's funny because I was just sitting here as you were saying that, and I'm thinking, for someone who's never watched him before, we haven't really made that good of a case for him. Like, he's not strong. He's not strong enough yet. He doesn't really set good screens. He can't shoot threes. But then, like, if you're in that boat, if you're listening right now and you're in that boat, I just advise you to just even just go onto YouTube and, like, type in Evan Mobley highlights. Like, it's hard to put into words without having seen it just how good he is, even though he everything that he should be able to do, or that bigs need to do almost in the NBA today, they aren't really his foremost talents. But then everything else, every intangible that you don't expect a big to do, he is a master at it. Like, and that's what makes him so weirdly unique. And then all the big man skills that we've said he's not that good at are all, there's a baseline still there for him to become good at them. And if he does, he's going to be like a top three center in the NBA in 5 years. And I don't think that that's out of the question at all. I don't think a top one center is out of the question at all. I'm very high on Mobley. As I said, if it wasn't for Cade, I'd have him one comfortably. And that, for me, is transitioning into the defense. That's why I'm so high on him. I know we talked about the strength again. It's hard to put into words, but, like, he just swallows dudes up out there all the time. His lateral quickness on switches, his ability to to move from one block to the other as a rotation defender and get a shot block. It's wild, especially the lateral quick, especially the ability to switch. I don't think it's not a guy who can hold his own in switches. I think it's closer to a Bam Adebayo who can legitimately switch for entire games and win 60% of those switches. Like, that's probably the most valuable thing a big man can do defensively right now. Do you agree with that or not?
I don't think I'm at the point where I want him switching full-time. I think periodic switches, late in shot clock, stuff like that, switch and recover, I think he's more than capable with. I do think quicker guys will get by him pretty easily, but then his go-go gadget arms just really swallow up any layup attempts. I absolutely love his pick-and-roll defense. His ability to hard hedge, to drop and recover. He's never out of position. He's all, you know, if he's playing drop coverage, he's always even with the roller, so they're not getting that lob attempt, and his length can then recover to the ball handler if they pull up. If it's, you know, laying a shot clock or the primary defender couldn't get over the screen, he, like you said, he does have that ability to switch and really be disruptive with that length and that agility, because he does have it. I wouldn't want him switching everything right away. I'd like to like him more to just kind of cause periodic chaos and then make sure that his length kind of retreats back to his man near the rim, where he can, you know, really be that devastating weak side shot blocker that he is, because his rotations are really impressive when he's coming from that weak side. And he's a really patient shot blocker too, where he's not going out there and just leaping at everything. You see these athletic dudes just throwing shots into the 10th row, but it's like, okay, well, the next time you do that, the guard's just going to throw it up even higher. You're going to miss it, and then your guy just got an easy dunk. He's not doing that. He's timing it. It's really impressive. So
that... I think you're right where, I mean, Bam is obviously a stretch. It's like all these comparisons that you make, and I'm not a big fan of comparisons, but I think I just use them as kind of a something to give you a picture in your mind's eye of a player who does these sort of things. And Bam, like the Gobert comparison, like the Luka comparison for Cade, they're all like almost unrealistic comparisons, because these dudes are just like the best at what they do in these particular skill sets. But I just think that his ability to move his feet, and maybe as much as it is impressive in switches, it's, as you said, it's more impressive when they're running, you know, hard hedges or blitz coverage, and he can hedge and recover. Like, the ability to hedge and recover reminds me of, you know, USC, another USC big man, Onyeka Okongwu last year, but to an even higher level, where it's like, he's probably quicker, he's definitely taller, and he's definitely longer, like, and he still gets out there, waves his arms around that kind of looked like big, wacky, wavy, inflatable arm tube man. And then gets back to his man on the roll and still, like, does it all within, you know, 3-4 seconds. And it's all done extremely crisply and executed brilliantly. Like, I just think that, as I said, it's hard to really put him into words, I think, without watching him. He's just a unique player and someone that I think has a chance to be a multi-time all-star. The problem, I guess, I have with him is what usage can he have on offense that can make him a true superstar, I guess, and a guy who can really, you know, be worthy of the number two pick, but worthy to be called a franchise, you know, carrying big man. Like, I don't think he can ever average 25 a game. Like, obviously that's, well, that's without, you know, we don't know what he's going to be as he projects on as a you know, grown up instead of a 19-year-old. But I don't know. I don't see him as a Karl-Anthony Towns type of, you know, load bearing offensive center, or even an Embiid or a Jokic. But I think he can impact the game enough where he's better than, you know, Towns eventually, or he's just a guy who's at, you know, a top 20 player in the league. Like, what kind of usage do you think he can carry going forward?
And I think he could absolutely be like the second guy on a real contender. Until that outside shot really proves itself, until that happens, I don't think he can be a primary offensive option, because he doesn't have that strength to really dominate the post like Embiid does. But I know a lot of people keep throwing around like the passive tag on him, which I kind of get, because some games his numbers are underwhelming. But I think a lot of that is because he's just always out there making the right decision every time.
Yeah.
If a double comes, he's finding the cutter or the spot up guy, and he's not forcing shots. He's making the right read, and it's just a very cerebral game to him. So when you say that he's not going to put up a ton of numbers, I don't disagree.
The impact that he's going to have is going to be superstar impact rather than superstar box score.
Right.
It's like Nikola Jokic before this season. How many games had he had a season where he scores 8 points or he scores, you know, 12 points, but he has 16 assists and Denver win by 30? Like,
yeah.
That's, I don't think Mobley's that type of passer, but that's the same mentality, whereas Jokic just makes the right play all the time. This season, Denver aren't as good around him, so that's why he's putting up 27 a game or whatever, because that's the right play now. I do think Mobley has some of that in him, where it's like you said, it's more doing the right thing rather than being passive. It's, you know, if I can't score, someone else can. Someone else is open, let's move the ball, let's get a win, rather than, hey, I'm going to get 25 and I'm going to be the number one pick and, you know, I'm going to be Anthony Edwards.
Right.
you know, it's a different mentality, I think, and that's not a knock on Ant, because if you can go and be the number one pick and get paid $10 million a year for going to a school that's going to lose a couple of games, I don't think that's a bad thing personally. But yeah, Mobley, I think, is built a little bit different to that. Let's take a quick break and then we'll come back. We'll do Jalen Suggs and then we'll talk a little bit about just how important it's going to be for the draft balls to land in Minnesota's favor.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prop G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. Not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday, and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
All right. We are back. And I want to talk about Jalen Suggs. You have in your draft guide, again, #basketball.com. Please go and check it out. It's a very good read. And especially if you have about 100 hours worth of reading time in your mind to get through it all. But you had Jonathan Kuminga as your third pick, just as a, in general, as a bit on a, you know, NBA level big board. I kind of flip flop between Suggs and Jalen Green, but we both kind of agreed that through a Minnesota lens, Jalen Suggs is the guy that we are gonna finish this podcast on, or at least the deep dive into the players section of it. Tell me about Jalen Green. You are the draft expert. I want to know what you see. About Jalen Suggs. There's too many Jalens, man, in this class.
Especially right back to back. That's just rude of them. One of them needs to drop off and get better.
Yeah. Yeah, Jalen Suggs is who we're talking about.
He's so much fun to watch. I mean, just his passion, his competitiveness, just his personality reminds me a lot of like Donovan Mitchell or Ja Morant, where he could really be, you know, one of those culture changing guys for a franchise going early. You know, selfishly, I kind of would have loved to see him at, you know, not a powerhouse of a program like Gonzaga, to see like how he could really carry a team, because they have three point guards that could easily start on any top 25 team in the country. But the way he's taken that team from really good to like all-time great. He's a freak athlete, really impressive passer, you know, can score in a variety of ways. I like his defensive energy a lot. And I know his outside shooting has fallen off here recently, but I think it's good enough where teams will have to respect it. And there isn't anything like inherently wrong with his mechanics. It can't be really tweaked or anything. So I expect him to be, you know, at least a league average shooter. But really for him, what I'm so sold on is just his personality, his work rate, his work ethic, that competitiveness where he just wants to go out there and kill you every game. And he's going to leave his body on the line every single game. And he's one of those guys that if he, you know, a lot of teams at the top of the draft, aka the Timberwolves, have just a really bad culture around them, and they don't know how to win. They're not used to winning. They don't have this winning mentality. That's something that he will bring to whatever team takes him immediately from day one.
That mentality raises a player's floor so much higher than almost any other steal, I think, because even, you know, even if he completely flops, he's Pat Beverly. You know what I mean? Like, even if he, you know, like, just having that dog mentality and that guy who's going to go out and, as you said, kill you, rip your throat out, stomp on your face every night just to get, you know, an extra 2 points for your team. Like, that is, that's one of the best intangible skills you can have. And then with Suggs, it's supplemented by the fact that he has actual NBA level skills. I think the knock on him is and probably will continue to be, what is he great at? And is he, you know, I did hear maybe Jonathan Chark say it the other day on a Ringer podcast, that like, is a top five pick too much for a superstar role player? And I did find myself kind of agreeing with that, but then like, a superstar role player isn't a superstar role player, you know, virtually a star player, right, or a very good player. Like, right, it's a weird box to be in and not be just a very good player. Like, I think Jalen Suggs is a really good fit on a Timberwolves team that has all those cooks in the kitchen, like we spoke about before, because he's just so scalable to any situation. He can pass the ball, he can shoot it enough, he can definitely shoot it from within the arc. He's a really good finisher. That competitiveness, he rebounds, he plays really good defense. Like, he might not do anything at the same level that Cade Cunningham passes, or that Evan Mobley blocks shots, or that Jalen Green dunks on dudes and, you know, finishes with that explosive athleticism. But, like, he does all of those things really well. And it reminds me a little bit of, I guess, Halliburton, you know, and maybe a little bit more enhanced version of Halley. Like, it's just someone, those players usually seem to work out pretty damn well in the NBA.
Yeah, and just having that mental toughness is something that just, you know, it's kind of like a conveyor belt at a factory. It's, if you don't have it, you're out, like, you're done.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see that from so many guys in the league who are just uber talented, and they don't have that killer mindset, so they just kind of end
Andrew
up being,
Wiggins.
Okay, right, that's what I was just about to get to. Is like imagine Andrew Wiggins with this dude's personality. Like, it would be incredible.
Yeah.
And he'd be, you know, maybe Jaylen Brown, but a kid can dream. So I love the fit for Suggs in Minnesota. Bring him home if he's, you know, if the Timberwolves fall, if the Timberwolves fall to three. It just makes sense. And I know there's going to be overlap with the guards, but the Wolves aren't in a position to draft based on fit. You know, it's who is the best player here, because we suck and things need to change and we need to learn how to win and want to win and have that passion to win. And guys can say that in all their post-game interviews, but based on all of their play all season, they don't have it. Jalen Suggs brings that day in and day out every day he steps on the court. So I think it's weird to say that a rookie will bring a sense of accountability to a group of veterans, but he 100% will.
Yeah, and even if it's not felt, you know, super impactful on day one, it's going to be felt by day 500, you know, in his second season. Like, that's the thing about these rookies, obviously, is you don't just get them for one season to be great rookies. And it's, you know, if you have Jalen Suggs for 6 years under, you know, team-friendly deals, but at least five of those years, you're going to get a really good player, I think. And there's still a chance that you get an actual star, not a star in their role. He doesn't need to take too many steps in too many areas to be a dude who averages, you know, 18-6-6 and plays, like, really, really good defense.
Yeah. Well, and we saw it this year with him going to Gonzaga, who's a really veteran team and was a title contender before he ever signed any letter of intent. And you can see how hard he plays for those guys, how hard they play for him, and that he's just already just like this natural leader. And you know, I know fans want more than, oh, just intangible impact. And it's like, what does he do on the court? It's all that carries over, all of that raises guys' games. And he's really freaking talented too.
Yeah. The thing I think with him is that the thing with Gonzaga is that they don't take one and done prospects. Like, they don't take highly recruited guys because they really have a system and a culture that's built to bring guys up, you know, and by their sophomore, junior, or senior year, they're really high level contributors. Corey Kispert is a perfect example of who's been building to this, you know,
love Corey
Kispert. Yeah, like, he's one of the best players in the country right now, college players in the country, and probably a first round pick. That's the guys that they usually take. And by them signing Suggs, that's a good enough indication that of, like, the mentality that he brings and the winning basketball mentality, because they don't want to, you know, lose in the first round of the tournament with a bunch of one-and-dones and, you know, have headlines about their players and how good they're going to be in the NBA. They want to win the national championship, whether it's with guys who are going to the NBA or not. And the fact that they were confident enough to bring Jalen Suggs in, give him the ball, and let him be a part of that team, a team that is one of the best college teams ever, and probably going to win the national championship, that speaks volumes, I think, for his mentality and the winning aspect of basketball that he brings. And like you said, it's people want to hear more than intangibles, but he does things on the court. He's not Pat Beverly. Like, he can shoot the ball off the dribble, he can dunk on dudes, he can get to the rim. Like, he's shooting well over 50% on two-pointers. He's a good player, man. Yeah, I don't know
he's a really impressive playmaker too. He's not to the level of Cade, but he's a really dynamic passer, especially off the dribble when he's attacking the rim.
Yeah, Suggs is going to be a really good player, man. I think the great thing about this draft class, and maybe scary thing as someone who's a Timberwolves fan, is I think that these three guys especially, I'd be very surprised if they're not good players in the NBA.
100%.
Kuminga and Green, I think, could maybe go either way. Like, I could see them fizzling out or becoming, you know, better than Suggs or better than Mobley. Like, those two have a bunch of potential, but
yeah, these three guys, I think those two have a higher ceiling.
Yeah.
But I think Suggs's floor is much higher.
Very high.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's these three guys are really almost as locked as you can get for what is still a crapshoot, you know, to be very productive NBA players. And I think that brings me, I guess, to my last point of the episode, is that I just want to ask you how important is it that these damn lottery balls fall the way of Minnesota?
Well, and the Timberwolves have moved up in the lottery once in the history of the franchise, and they've been in the lottery a lot in the history of the franchise, and that was last year. And it could really make or break the next 5 to 10 years. I know that's being dramatic, and
it's really not, though. It's, I don't think it's dramatic at all. I honestly think there's nothing, there is not one thing that Minnesota, Dustin Roses, Glenn Taylor, Chris Finch could do that is more impactful than getting one of these top three picks, and specifically the number one pick.
Yeah, like, and that Cade is, he's a franchise changing guy, and to miss out on that and then end up with bringing back the same or similar roster with no infusion of life or energy or hope, and then being good enough where we end up with the 7th or 8th pick next year, and it's just, you know, that treadmill of mediocrity, it's disheartening. And so kind of ending on a dour note after hyping up three teenagers for an hour. But and it's incredibly important. And if, you know, I as the season has progressed, I keep going back to that line from one of your earlier podcasts with Kyle Teige about how just excited he was for this season and how he just didn't give a damn about the 2021 draft. And I'm like, I kind of care a lot about the 2021 draft, man. It's like, this is really important. And if this doesn't go the way that it easily, and, you know, based on the odds, likely won't go, it's going to be a long couple of years.
Yeah, it was pretty easy to only be excited about this season and not the draft when we'd had 9 months off and the team won their first two games. But now that they've lost the 33 or something, like, it's all I can focus on at this point. Like, obviously, I can focus on every game. I love watching the Timberwolves just
We'll continue
viewpoint.
To be so.
Yeah, like, we are deranged, but, like, this is the thing that we have to look forward to. There isn't another thing that can make this team much better, unless they pull off some sort of, you know, miracle trade at the trade deadline that's even less likely than getting a top three pick. This is the next big thing for the Timberwolves. History shows that Lady Luck will smite us at any chance she gets. But I will be watching on draft night with the most intent eye that I think I ever have for a Timberwolves. If they get the number one pick, people that aren't kind of on our same level of excitement for this class will think that I'm being dramatic here. But if they got the number one pick, I think it would be one of the best moments in the franchise's history. And that's saying something in multiple different ways, that how bad the franchise is and how good Cade Cunningham is. So it's going to be a good draft night or a really bloody bad draft night. As long as someone that, you know, as long as another Western Conference team, I don't want someone in their division to get Cade Cunningham. I don't want to play him every four times every season. I can't deal with it.
And it'll be fitting. I mean, the Wolves will end up with pick 4, and then Cade will stay in the Western Conference, and then Golden State will get Jalen Suggs, and
they'll win the championship with Clay back as well.
Right, and Jalen Suggs will drop 50 every time he returns to Minneapolis, and it'll just be the endless circle of torment for Timberwolves Nation.
That still might be better than this season.
And I'll have a 500 word recap coming out right after it. So, because I'm a lunatic.
Oh, that was a depressing note to end the show on. But I think in general, it's just it is good to try and get a little bit of a primer on these guys. There's still plenty of Timberwolves basketball to analyze and stuff that we hope changes coming out of the All-Star break with the new coach and the. Hopefully, you know, a few more things installed or uninstalled, as he said. But right now, it's the draft's still very important, and hopefully we can have at least some sort of excitement going into it until we know for sure that they're not going to keep this pick.
Absolutely.
As usual, thank you very much for coming on, Tyler. As I've said multiple times, please go and check out his draft guide over at #basketball. And anything that he writes on Canis as well. I can't sit here and not promote the Canis family. But Yeah, you're a legend, man. Thanks for coming on.
I appreciate it.